Welcome to Reach For It Radio Show with your host, Christina Winslow. This program offers entertainment, inspiration, and fun as we feature practical tools to help you achieve what is actually possible. Learn new ways to reach for the stars and attain what you really want out of life. You just might find it is easier than you think. And now, your host, Christina Winslow.
Welcome to the show today. I'm so glad you're joining us because the topic we're going to talk about is hope for the future. And a lot of you as listeners share my vision of optimism for the future. You know, a lot of us are unplugging from the matrix. We're, you know, rejecting the old paradigm. We're tired of the doom and gloom, the media programming, the government corruption and overreach into our lives. And when we get to that place, a lot of us can take one of two paths. We can take the path of doom and gloom, destruction, fear-mongering, which is really a hot ticket today, especially in the independent media. There's a lot of that going on. And I don't want to take a Pollyanna approach, but I have more of an optimistic approach. So when I came across this author and visionary and futurist and fellow optimist, I was so excited. His name is Kingsley Dennis. He's a PhD. I'm going to give you a little bit of his background. He's an author of numerous books. He's an incredible light worker, light warrior, truth seeker, and visionary, and I'm sure I could give him numerous more titles, but he's giving us some hope for the future. And it is my passion, mission, and honor to bring people like this to my audience and to open up the energy for a new possibility. So with us today is Kingsley Dennis. He's a PhD, a sociologist, researcher, and writer. He is the author of several critically acclaimed books, including New Revolutions for a Small Planet, New Consciousness for a New World, After the Car, and the celebrated Dawn of the Akashic Age with Irvin Laszlo. He previously worked in the sociology department at Lancaster University in the UK. Kingsley is author of numerous articles on social futures, technology, and new media communications, global affairs, and conscious evolution. Kingsley grew up in the UK and now lives in Spain. You can learn more about him at kingsleydennis.com. Kingsley, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Christina. It's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me and for giving such a gracious introduction.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. You know, I have chills running up my spine. When I found out about your book, it was within seconds. I contacted your publicist and publisher and said, I need to book Kingsley on the show, because your book, The Phoenix Generation, is a hope for the future. And I'm so grateful for you putting this into words, to bring out your research, your background, and also give us some hope for the future. So could you tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write this book?
Yes, thank you, Christina. And I also resonated with your introduction about how it's time to stand back from the fear-mongering and to take the empowerment back from ourselves. So this is a theme which I've been working through. And like you say, it's also important not to be a Pollyanna, as you rightly put, to be aware of what's happening in the world, but to make a conscious choice of where we wish to place ourselves and where we wish to go. Because really, how we see the world is a matter of perception. And once we can frame the perception, then we can start working towards where we wish to go. So as a sociologist for many years, my arena is looking at social change and how that interacts with human consciousness. So human consciousness and the impact on social change. And I've looked at certain themes on that, and the previous book that I wrote with Irvin Laszlo called Dawn of the Akashic Age, I actually introduced the term the Phoenix Generation, because as we're looking ahead, we tend to frame the future about ourselves and our generation. Whereas if we're talking about the future, we really need to try to grasp and understand about the generation to come. Because change, although it may seem like it happens overnight, it actually unfolds over time. And we see a great change over generation. And so I wanted to look at not only the change which is happening around us now, but how can we envision that change if we have a new generation arriving? And this is a critical time because the world is in flux. And Christina, when the world is in flux, greater change is possible because everything is unstable. Now, take the analogy, for example, you're on a beach and you're making a sand castle, and you can put the last few grains of sand onto your sand mountain, and it all collapses. It's because those last few pieces can have such an impact. And so when there's change in social systems, in our living systems, economics, our health, our education, when everything is in flux, and also human consciousness is in flux, then we don't need huge change to make a difference. We can make a difference through small inputs and participation of change. And so bearing that in mind, it brought me to the subject of, well, how can we envision the future with a new generation coming into this time period of flux, and what kind of impact will they make? So that was the argument that I started with.
Well, I love how you break it down. You're such a gifted writer that, you know, at times the reader might feel like they're in a university level, master's level education of sociology and human behavior. This is such a page turner at the same time. I could not stop reading your book. And you explain the different generations, and you talk a little bit about how we can assist this change and all of us play a part. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, the bridge generation and who these people are and what we can do to help bring about the change?
Sure, and thank you for asking. I previously gave a very brief overview of the book, and I tried deliberately not to make the book too dense, you know, that we could access it, because part of what I'm talking about is that we need to access our intuition more. And so I think this is probably the least academic way or that I've written so far, because I'm also speaking from my intuition as well. And so I do ask that all readers approach this from their sense of self. And so talking about the book, the first part is sociological, looking at what's going on in the world and the situation with the state of the systems, etc. And then the second part, I do talk about the bridge generation, and that is us. And what is most significant about this time is that we can participate in it consciously. We can consciously be aware of what is happening and make a choice of how to participate. And that also means trying to reach out to those newborns and the new generation coming in, so they do have a modicum or a percentage of people who can understand the new mind coming in, who will be thinking differently. And so imagine that we have one foot on one side of the river and a foot on the other side of the river. We are like the bridge, because it's important to understand where we've been and where we are, that I call the old mind, or we can say the old paradigm, and what's coming in, the new mind. And it's important that we have this connection so we can communicate. If we can't communicate, then it's going to be more difficult for the new minds coming in and trying to connect with what's already here. So the need to understand the old vocabulary and the old mind, not to reject it, but to be aware. And that's why I feel it's going to be a conscious effort on the part of us, of the British generation of this moment, to connect with what's going on, but not to be distracted or overly disturbed by it. So it's very important to have an internal equilibrium, so we can understand the financial systems, the educational systems, and the changes that we see in the world around us, but to ground that, and not to be afraid to think differently, not to be afraid to speak our mind differently, because actually there are more and more people becoming like-minded and understanding the change. I think we've reached a moment, Christina, that we call the emperor's new clothes. We realize that the situation is quite naked, systems aren't working, they're quite detrimental, but rather than reject them, we have to try to create new models within the old systems. And that's, I think, an important point, if I'll just finish there, is that the first reaction is to protest. Like, these systems are inequitable, they're unfair, so let's protest. But that actually is not going to create solutions, because it allows the incumbent powers, the authority structures, to be stronger, because they're reacting against protest. The way that I see the British generation and the new generation coming in to be most effective is to create new models that make the old models obsolete, but to create them here within the system by doing our own individual part. Because like I said at the early analogy about the sand and the last few particles, we can make a contribution from our individual efforts. We don't have to make a grand gesture, a world-changing event. We can change the world by small acts, because each small act reverberates into the whole system, because we're all connected and the system's in flux. And that's why I think it's important, A, to be grounded, B, to be equilibrium, and to be knowledgeable, and to reach out from the old system, but to allow new thinking to come in.
Well, I agree with that philosophy so much, Kingsley, because let me give you an example. And I believe in Spain and the UK, you're experiencing the same thing we are in the States. There's a big movement about non-GMO food. And the marches and the protests, I absolutely believe that it's a good coming together, communities showing support. But you know, if each one of us changed what we bought every week at the grocery store, we would crash their system much faster and crash the old food companies that are, you know, causing allergies in our kids with the chemicals and the, you know. And if we don't have the money, find, you know, other ways. Maybe grow your own food in your backyard, or get some chickens if you can in your neighborhood, and have some your own organic eggs or whatever it may be. And so just by being conscious about our little day-to-day activities, we could totally change the world. And I like the fact that you talk about how we can make a difference without being a leader of a big movement. You know, in our own little ways, we can change this and help it happen a little sooner. I know a lot of people want change to happen yesterday. But, you know, what are we doing to make that change come about?
You're exactly right, Christine, and that's what I call the difference between the first wave response and the second wave. The first wave is this protest movement, or to try to be global, which has its uses, because it actually promotes, or it makes known this this subject, and it exposes it. But to be more effective, this second wave response, then allows individuals to take note of the situation and then to make the changes in their individual lives. And that is what makes a difference. Like you say, if we all change our habits, that would have greater impact because it affects all the dots joining together. And that is the change that I outline in the Phoenix Generation, because we're trying to understand that concept now. We're trying to get our heads around it, as we say. But the generation coming in, they are going to be intuitively understanding that, because they will be the first generation to be born into a world which is already globally connected across borders, across time and space, like never before. So whereas we are trying to change our thinking patterns because we're shifting over the years into a more globally technology connected society, the young generation, we're born into this. So this understanding will be more instinctive. And this social networking, reaching out to people, sharing ideas, it's a form also of empowerment, that instead of being disillusioned or disheartened by feeling that our response to the major global powers is not being heard, we won't feel despondent. Rather, more and more, and the younger people will connect across with their social networks and create action by joining together, and that will bring a great positive feeling of energy and empowerment. And I think that is a totally new paradigm, which is going to have a, let's say, a horizontal effect rather than a kind of vertical hierarchical effect. So we're moving from a top-down type of system and society to a distributed, horizontally, socially connected society. And those changes that will come about from that will be incredible and very, very rewarding to see.
Well, you know, as you talk about this, I think we forget. You know, a lot of us in the truth movement and whatever consciousness, you know, working to raise consciousness and make the world a better place and break free from the old systems. I think sometimes we feel like, oh my gosh, it's never going to change. But we forget what you just, you made it just the most beautiful point here, Kingsley, that these new kids that are being born into the world are being born into a new they're in a different vibration because we're connected. We're now talking to people across the world on a daily basis and connecting with like-minded people who believe in free energy or, you know, not using plastic and, you know, all these different things, environmentally conscious, socially conscious, economically conscious people. And they're coming into, they're going to be born into such a different world. And I can bring it down a little for the audience. It just popped into my mind, Kingsley, when you were speaking of these concepts and your vision for the future. You know, when I was a kid, my mom would have followed whatever the pediatrician said if when I was a child. You know, oh, she needs these vaccines. She has to have these shots, whatever. You know, and my kids who are young, they're elementary school, and I'm going to talk about the indigo children with you in a little bit, but they see a mom who stands up to the doctor and says, no, I'm not giving my kids the flu shot. They watch three different people come in and try to have a flu shot intervention with me, and I stand up to them and say, no, I use essential oils with my children to build their immune system. They don't need a flu shot. And they are never in the doctor compared to other kids, you know. And so now I'm modeling as a mother a different paradigm than was modeled for me. Can you imagine, you know, what I'm modeling for my children to stand up to the old paradigm of big pharma pushing the flu shot and other money-making things in the healthcare system? And now when they raise their children, who knows, there might not even be a flu shot, or there might be, you know, a more conscious way of dealing with the flu, with the new biotech industry that will be emerging with a new conscious society. So, you know, we are changing things even though we don't realize it, aren't we, Kingsley?
We certainly are, Christina, and I'm glad on that. Incredibly important point you just raised, because the subject of health is primary. I mean, I in the book I look at certain subjects, including health, education, media, lifestyle, politics, technology, and look at how the possible changes may come about with the new generation coming into the world. And I think health is paramount, because we're seeing the changes now in that more and more people are losing their confidence in the pharmaceutical industries. And you brought up the subject of vaccines, which I think has been exposed a lot recently. And many of us are beginning to move to not only seeking other ways and means of health. We call it alternative. Perhaps we shouldn't even call it alternative, just other ways. But also an instinctive understanding of health. We're listening more to our bodies as well. We're listening to what is known as the physical innate intelligence, the intelligence of our own bodies. And I think that's going to grow as well, as more of the younger people have an instinctual sense. They will start to listen to themselves more, not only in health, but in all the systems of the world. So now, for example, our parents, they would not question authority. They would not question the school person, the teacher. They would not question anybody in civil society. Now, our generation, yourself and me, we're starting to question. We're starting to step back and say, well, I don't go with that. I don't agree with you. This is my position. So we're already making the shift. That's why we're the bridge generation. Now, that's going to be passed on to the younger generation, and they're going to be born, and they'll be saying, well, I can't understand why you even thought that way in the first place. You know, that was crazy. Things are not like that. And so they will instinctively know that there's other ways of doing things. And so I think it will be a case of the emperor's new clothes, and that the younger children will be just pointing their fingers and saying, the king's naked, you know. He never had clothes on, and we've been believing all this stuff for so long. And then when that generation starts to take positions in society, in jobs, in health, as doctors, in finance, in business, then they will start to change the system from within. So that's why I'm quite positive about the future, because I can see how we, as participants and conscious agents, can create the change organically from within, rather than have to fight it and bang on it from the outside.
Well, and Kingsley, you are helping all of us have a little more optimism for the future, and studying human behavior and looking into the future, and you're giving all of us so much hope, and I'm so happy you're with us today. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will speak more with Dr. Kingsley Dennis, the author of The Phoenix Generation.
Would you like a tool to clear your energy field and raise your vibration instantly? Solfeggio Sound Healing from Earthly Frequencies is a new CD created to bring you earthly healing vibrations combined with higher dimensional galactic energy. Use this sound healing for meditation, massage therapy, releasing negativity, and astral travel. Solfeggio Sound Healing by Ted Winslow. Now available on iTunes and Amazon.com. Have you been told you should write a book? Do you need a little help getting started? Or maybe your manuscript is already written and you require some fine-tuning before you publish? Big Country Publishing offers writing coaching packages that are custom-tailored to you. Contact Big Country Publishing today so they can help you to get your book and message out to the world. Learn more at www.bigcountrypublishing.com.
Hello, I am Sharon Lynn Wyeth, and I have developed a proprietary system that reveals accurate insight into someone's personality traits called Namology Science. This science of unlocking the secrets hidden in a person's name has become so popular that I am offering a Namology Science Coaching Certification Program. Join our international community of certified Namology coaches. Go to knowthename.com for details.
Welcome back to the program, everyone. We're having a fascinating conversation about the Phoenix Generation and hope for the future and how we can make changes in our daily lives that can affect global change for future generations. And thank you, Kingsley, for being with us today. You are quite a visionary. And I like how you talk about how our generation, the bridge generation that are raising kids now or part of social movements, you know, how all of our even small actions can lay the groundwork. What I'd like to find out from you, and I'm just really curious because, you know, the baby boomer generation, they were the peace, love, Woodstock, John Lennon, change the world. What happened with all that, you know? I was recently at a dinner hosted by Gaiam TV. I'm surrounded by PhDs. They're all baby boomers. They are, you know, teaching doctorate programs at Ivy League colleges, working with Johns Hopkins medical students. And I'm sitting at the table, and I ask them, what happened? Why? Did the peace movement stop? What happened to the love generation? Did you guys all get Mercedes and forget about it? And they were, you know, that was kind of a conversation stopper. I didn't mean it. Maybe it sounded like an insult. I didn't mean it that way. But I was looking to their generation of what happened. You know, there was this huge movement. And then where is that now? Do you have any insight on that?
Well, I would say the movement was important, and perhaps we would not be here now without it. But again, I see it as an early wave or first wave, and as well as the Indigo Children, which you mentioned earlier, what we can talk about, in that we tend to have this understanding that things happen the first time. The first time we have a new paradigm or a new concept or idea to seep into society, it automatically changes then and there. But looking over the patterns of social and cultural patterns, it rarely happens like that. I mean, even looking back of the let's say the scientific revolution, or the idea that we went from a flat earth to a round earth moment, or the idea that we went from the concept that the earth was the center of the universe to our present paradigm. Now, that didn't happen overnight. It took, in some cases, took decades or even longer, and centuries. So I think the first early waves, such as the 60s, was important in that it helped to kind of disperse ideas. It brought over a lot of Eastern teachings, came into the West. People started to experiment with transcendental, let's say, methods and experimentation of the mind. And that helped to bring in a new wave of understanding. But it wasn't enough to let's say, to make it permanent or to crystallize the effect. And so what happened is that the generation grew up and got absorbed by society. The impetus or the impulses for change were not enough to override the dominant paradigm at the time. But you see, what I feel is that gradually, like today, we are a result of that. We had, you know, a lot of transpersonal psychology after that in the 70s onwards, especially in America, and the Esalen community, and especially on the West Coast. A lot of research, a lot of people bringing over new teachings, and that's percolated through society. And I think now society is more absorbed of those understandings, and now has a more preparation. It's like to make an analogy, Christina, when you're preparing the land to sow new crops. First you have to plow the land, Then you have to aerate it and let the fertilizer come through and mix it with the soil. And then you plow it a second time before you can seed the plant the new seeds. And so I think society is like that. We cannot go straight in at one go. We have to prepare the soil. And the 60s was the first wave of that. And it wasn't enough to crystallize a generation into majority of change agents. We could call it the 100th monkey syndrome. We didn't reach the 100th monkey from the 60s, but I feel that now we have a good foundation to create more lasting permanent change upon.
Well, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And you talk about the indigo children, and that's been a hot topic lately. I think my kids might be in that. They're 9 and 11. I don't know if where they really fit, but how do you see them, the indigo children, in the future as they age? You know, how are they going to help this new Phoenix generation who haven't been born yet? Is that correct? The Phoenix generation, or they're just now coming?
Well, again, I don't wish to over-categorize this, and I think this is a danger. But the Phoenix generation is what I look at as children being born around now. So it could have been, you know, within the last few years. But young children who will come of age or be teenagers around 2030. So they could be born anytime the last few years or around now. It's just this type of, post the opening of the 21st century. So now that's what I call the Phoenix generation. And they are a later way from the indigo children. And I have a personal reserve against the indigo children. Not the children, but the naming. Mm-hmm. And I feel that perhaps in some way it has been detrimental, because the labeling of the indigo children put a lot of pressure and stigma onto these children by singling them out from the rest of society and saying they were definitely different. Now, they were an early wave, but of much lesser numbers. And I feel that what's important is that we try to normalize change and see it as something which is an organic, natural process and will bring in change, rather than trying to label something being very different. So when I talk about the Phoenix generation, I name it as a generation per se, but I don't put any name or category upon the younger children. Because again, I feel that we don't need to stigmatize them with any expectations from ourselves. We need to give them the freedom to find their own footing, to not feel that they are called upon to be this or that. And so when the indigo children were named, and in fact it came from a very different understanding, it came from a lady who had a condition whereby she could see energy as colors. And so she saw this color around the young children, which was showing her that they were coming in with a different energy vibration, not that they had any kind of other kind of stigma to them. So I talk about in the book that we're not talking about the new age, we're talking about the new normal. And we have to allow these children to be normal and allow them to find and to tell us what they want, what they need, rather than for them us to say you are this or that. And I feel that perhaps you are seeing that in your children, Christina. I know friends around me are telling me about their families, that they are learning from the children. The children are telling them, the parents, what they want and how they want to learn. And that's an important point, how they want to learn. And I remember being at school, and if I used to talk to my classmates, which I did often, I would get a kind of proverbial slap on the wrist for cheating. You know, that was the paradigm. We could not communicate. But the younger children, they want to communicate, because they've been born into a world where they're already communicating and collaborating with social networks around the world and all the time. So that's one kind of change we're going to see, away from a kind of non-connection paradigm to one where the younger children should be encouraged to collaborate and be together, for example.
You know, it's so true. And even if they don't have a label, and I always held back on, you know, labeling my kids as Crystal or Rainbow or Indigo, or, you know, it's just all of these kids right now. Even if the parents are very closed off and part of the more third dimensional old system and model, their kids are not. They're, you know, I told my kids, Kingsley, I said, you know, not everyone believes what we believe, so watch what you say at school. Use your discernment. And they came back and said, no, all my friends believe in ETs. They believe in, you know, and they're like schooling my husband and I. And they don't eat, you know, they're not eating GMOs. They're, you know, they want to go organic. And I'm thinking, you know, that was not a conversation I had in third grade, Kingsley. So it is a different vibration out there. And these kids are amazing. They will say things like, I don't like the energy of that client. You know, they'll tell me this.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how perceptive. Tell me more. You know, why don't you like that? Because they are the teachers for our generation, for sure. So talk about a little bit, you know, like I said, your book is so fascinating. It was, you know, Kingsley, I receive books daily, owning a publishing company, and also with the radio show, because I interview authors who'd be considered a book nerd. I love books. I cannot read enough of them. And your book was like one of those suspense novels in a way, because it was thrilling for me to turn the next page to find out what was going to happen next. You have such insight because you bring about the historical, the sociological, background, but you also talk about hope for the future. And can you talk a little bit about how this Phoenix generation, how they're going to be living? What's their reality going to be like when they're older, when they're adults?
Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned it was a page turner. I never thought I'd write a thrilling page turner. they are coming into a world which for them is borderless, and also, you know, they're going to have a totally different perception of time and space. When we spoke to our grandparents, and they talked about when they first listen to the radio, it was like a miracle having this voice come through the air. And now we have Wi-Fi, we're using technology that was first shown in Star Trek or a Stanley Kubrick 2001 film, you know. And so we've reached this so quickly that we are trying to get to grips with it, but the younger generation will be born into it. And so I say that they won't be born into change like we have been. They will be born as change. They will be part of the change because they will integrate and absorb all that's already changing in the world. And I also talk about in the book, I have the final chapter called Normalizing the Multiverse. And this is another concept that I think will be part of the future world of the Phoenix, is that not only the perception of the world in terms of who we are in nation states and in the technology, but who we are as a planetary species. And that for me is an important point, because we've come, especially through globalization, for better or for worse, we've come through empires and nation states, and I feel that the age of empires is over, and we've gone beyond that now. There never will be one great empire for the world anymore, because we're too interconnected. There's too many global players, and the global players in the future won't be the nation states. They will be the individuals. And so I would say that a Phoenix generation person won't think of themselves as a national citizen first. They will think themselves as a planetary citizen first, and then connect to their national locale second. Now, I don't think that's detrimental, because my vision of the future is that although we'll be more unified as a planetary species, that will help to create emphasis upon local cultures and diversity. Increased diversity within a planetary perspective. We will appreciate more our locale and our local resources and the food, and we want to nurture our locale, such as you said, our local food, our local communities, but that will be appreciated within a perspective as a planetary society. And as a planetary society, it's not only our planet that we stand on, but also how we're part of a multiverse. And I feel that the other understanding which will be part of the Phoenix Generation in the years to come is that we're not alone. We are an intelligence upon a planet which is part of a great intelligence. Now, however we wish to call that, whether we wish to put religious or spiritual names to that, I think that's your paradigm. I sense that the future, the Phoenix Generation, will have a deep, profound gnosis. And that gnosis, which is an inner recognition of the greater wealth of intelligence and love and compassion in the greater cosmic picture. And that will help them to have a perspective which is beyond the planet, which means it's very important that we sustain and look after our planet, not only for us, but because we are part of a much greater, bigger picture, and therefore the responsibility is greater. So the leap is quite tremendous. If we go from being a nation state of the past century to being a planetary society upon this planet and beyond. And that leap of perception relative to internal gnosis, I think, will be the great game changer in the future years to come, Christina.
And I'm so glad you introduced that into your book. It's something that I think we forget about. You know, we forget about, we're so focused on our day-to-day life, and we forget how we are citizens of the multiverse. And you really explained it well, and you put it into such a perspective that there was such an optimistic energy with that, and how it can better our lives. And it doesn't have to be, there's no fear in anything in your book of the future and all the beautiful things we have to look forward to. So it's such a gift to have you on the show. We have a short break, Kingsley, and when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about awareness and consciousness and some more information that you have to share with us.
Hello, my name is Ted Winslow, and as a professional singer, songwriter, musician, and audio engineer, I have worked with voice coaching for many years. I created a new CD, Vocalist Scales and Intervals, for my clients who were looking for an easy and affordable way to improve the quality of their voice. So, if you're in broadcasting, public speaking, or in the music industry, you'll benefit from the voice exercises. Just load it into your MP3 player and you're ready to go. Vocalist Scales and Intervals by Ted Winslow is now available on iTunes, Amazon, and BigCountryPublishing.com.
Hello, I'm Lauren Skye, and I've been teaching people how to live a better life through meditation. I've developed a 7-lesson audio course called Meditation for Living. These energy skills will teach you to find peace within, to release stress and pain, and to create your life according to your true path. Isn't it time you start living the life?
When it comes to publishing, there is a difference. At Big Country Publishing, they work with you on a personal level to create a custom publishing package that's tailored to your needs as an author. Their design team and experts in the industry will contribute to you to create the book that you've always dreamed of. Isn't it time to go big? Contact them today at www.bigcountrypublishing.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're speaking with Kingsley Dennis, PhD, and author of The Phoenix Generation. Kingsley, you've really put things into such a beautiful context to not only educate us more about the different change that's been happening over the last 100 years, but what we can hope for the future, and that the future is indeed bright. You talk a little bit about, and I've saved this for the end of the show, Kingsley, but this was, I wanted to ask you the first question. You talk about conscious awareness expanding, and the quarantine is soon to be lifted. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, Christina. The big juicy chocolate question until last. Now, I've been thinking and looking at this for many years, and I've been looking at also in the bigger picture. And despite the what we see on the mainstream news about things seemingly getting worse, if we look at this in a different perception, in fact, human consciousness has been expanding and developing incredibly at an exponential rate over the years and centuries. You know, we're having a conversation now that we would not be able to have in a past generation, because there wasn't A, the understanding, and therefore B, the vocabulary to have this. And so what's been happening is that within the human species, there's been a great inner world opening up. And as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, the great leaps forward in transpersonal psychologies, in experimentation with our minds and our connection to the bigger picture of the universe. In fact, what's happening is the great shamanizing of humankind, is that we are shamanizing ourselves, in that more and more the human species is opening up the interior world and exploring where we're intranauts rather than astronauts. And that is allowing us to come to a different position whereby we are acknowledging the role of human consciousness in reality. And that's also been verified by the latest in the sciences, in quantum physics, showing us that consciousness is an integral part of the world around us. I mean, even quantum mechanics and the observer effect, i.e. when we measure something, that measurement, i.e. the observer affects the thing being observed. That means that the material object has a connection with the human consciousness. And if our science can understand that, then that's the first step to understanding that human consciousness impacts our reality. And until this point, we've lived in a very materialistic paradigm, material world. And so by that very, very nature, we have, we can say, self-quarantined ourselves, blocked ourselves off, put our filters on, living under the veil. All these words express the fact that we are veiled to contact with the greater consciousness and perhaps other intelligences, and contacting the world or reality around us from our internal sense, not only from our external senses. So the more generations and the generation to come, the Phoenix generation, if they develop these internal resources, these internal faculties, imagine it like a muscle. The more we exercise a muscle, the stronger it gets. The more we exercise our internal muscle, our human consciousness and our interior world, the more that it will reach out and connect to the reality around us upon this, let's say, internal radio. And that will help to lift our quarantine, and our veil will thin out, and we will realize that, in fact, as science is very close to realizing, that we are part of a multidimensional cosmos. We are not just a dead rock spinning through a vacuum dead space, that we are in a vibrant cosmos that we can then perhaps make contact, just as the shamans of old made contact with intelligences that we put down to being something outside of our paradigm or anomalies. So we are going to, I feel, bring the anomalies into a normalizing. And the younger generation, the Phoenix generation, are going to have a much further advanced interior world. And when that veil starts to thin or drop, then I think the change and the perception, we are going to move not from a flat Earth to a round Earth, but from a round Earth to a multidimensional cosmos. And that is really going to blow our minds.
Well, I'm excited for that day. I'm going to be taking my wheatgrass shots so I can live to see some of the changes that these future generations are going to incorporate. I think it's the dream of a lot of us now to live in that type of world. And anything we can do today to help pave the way for this new generation to create that new earth, a new reality, whatever you would like to label it, you know, that it is possible. And Kingsley, we just have a few more minutes. This has been such a pleasure. Would you like to close with anything for the audience?
Well, thank you, Christina. First, I would like to thank you for inviting me, and thank people for listening to me as well, because if there were no listeners, I would have no need to speak. But I would like to say that I think we have to realize that we have all the resources we need, all the tools we need within ourselves, and we have the choice. And having that freedom of choice is fundamental, because we have to choose how we wish to perceive the world and the future, because thinking is itself a vibration and energy which attracts. And so we do really attract greater than we actually realize the world around us. Now, you can take that message how you wish, but I've looked into quantum physics, I've quantum biology, and there's a lot of validation about how our cells, CELLS, our cells radiate biophotons, which attract energy. And so we do have the onus, the responsibility onto us. And so having that is a great tool of empowerment. It's not about being wishy-washy or Pollyanna. It's about being pragmatic, because we take that understanding and we put it into our daily lives. We change how we relate to people, how we relate to friends, our loved ones, family, how we go to work, and how we choose to respond to the situations, to the difficulties that the world provides us or gives to us without choice. Our choice is how to respond. And from that, we can make our steps to change incrementally, bit by bit. We do have that choice and that power, Christina.
Well, that was beautiful, and thank you for ending on that note. And if you would like to find out more information about Dr. Kingsley Dennis and his work to change the world, go to his website, kingsleydennis.com. And Kingsley, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been such a pleasure.
The pleasure's been mine, Christina. Thank you, and I love your energy too, and it's been very infectious.
Oh, well, thank you, Kingsley. And to all of you out there, thank you for taking some time out of your day to join us, and sending you blessings, blissful, joyful, and peaceful energies this week. Namaste.
Thank you for tuning in this week to Reach For It Radio. Please join your host, Christina Winslow, live each Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, on BBS Radio. Listen live or listen later. Subscribe for free on iTunes, iHeartRadio, or Stitcher. Or connect with us on reachforitradio.com.